In partnership with the Treasure Site Areas Grey, welcome everyone to a new season of the Live from the Code Bar podcast, recorded from the Code Theme Bar of Fenwood Manor. I'm your guide on this adventure, Rob. On this show, it's another one of our new roundtable formats. In this time, we're going to be speaking about armchair treasure hunting for beginners. What recommendations we might have, tips and techniques that could help you get started. Joining me on this roundtable is the regular George Ward and our special guest, Augie. Enjoy the show. Welcome, everybody, to the Live from the Code Bar podcast. I've got a very special roundtable. This is our new format. We're going to go with a little bit here more this season for the Live from the Code Bar podcast. We're going to do a roundtable. We'll have a returning guest coming on, and we also got a brand new guest. And this new guest is actually somebody that was really involved with the podcast before there actually even was a podcast. So we'll get into that story as well. But first off, I want to introduce you to returning veteran of the podcast, George Ward. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
And it's a very special welcome to my friend Augie. He is joining us all the way from Ohio, and he is going to be joining us for the first time, but he is a longtime friend of the podcast. He was there, as I was saying before we even actually launched. I was speaking to him about helping me sort of set up with Twitter and a couple other things. So welcome, Augie.
Hey, thanks. Nice to be here.
Excellent. So let's do a little bit of a round thing. We're going to do today is a special episode on getting started in armchair treasure hunting. I know a lot of people have requested this sort of a little bit of a help. Some people have reached out to me on Facebook and some on Twitter, actually. And they basically said, I've picked up this book. It says that it's an armchair treasure hunt. I just don't know what to do. So, you know, I Googled it and I found X amount of websites and I found X amount of things. And one of the things that came up was your podcast. And I was like, so they reached out. And that makes me feel good, of course. But it is also something that is very interesting, you know, because we are veterans. We've all participated in a lot here. George, do you just want to give a bit more of a breakdown of your background again in armchair treasure hunting so people that are listening can understand where you're coming from?
Yeah, I'm the only armchair treasure hunter that doesn't really care about treasure, and I never have. What I really like are puzzles, right? And so years and years and years ago, me and my friend Brett started working on some Reddit puzzles together. That led into doing some secret stuff. But my, you know, my interest has always sort of been on puzzles. You give me a problem, I need to know the solution to that problem, no matter how I find it. So that's sort of my background. It's just puzzles in general.
And Augie, like I said, why don't you fill us in on where you're coming from and what your experience is?
Yeah, similar background, except I also adore treasures. I started out as a competitive gamer, so I was on the pro circuit for a couple of CCGs. From there, went into escape rooms and competitive escape rooms. So, you know, we have competed in the World Championship of Escape Rooms. We got 10th in Red Bulls. We got 3rd in ER Champs, I think 2 years ago. That's actually next weekend now. And then from competitive escape rooming. I also got into ARGs a lot, similar to George, like a massive fan of puzzles. So I also am an ARG creator. And then most recently, just 2 years ago, this week, we actually did our first treasure hunt, and I've done with a couple of different, groups of friends as teams. But, since then have been basically obsessed. We've won 6 in the last 2 years. So it's been an incredible journey that I'm really excited to get deeper into.
I got to ask, I'm sorry, Robert, I'm just going to flat out cut you off. I got to ask, what game did you play? Were you like a StarCraft dude or?
I was on the Versus, pro circuit for a couple of years. This was, Upper Deck Entertainment. So this was actually Marvel and DC's answer to Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
And then also like played quite a bit of Magic over the years, but the Versus pro circuit was, it was $1 million pro circuit, that lasted for a handful of years. It was a blast. Best game I've ever played.
Oh, okay. When you said game circuit, I was like, oh, you played video. Hey, you're a Fortnite dude. That's awesome. But no, card games. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. You both got obviously a lot of experience and everybody knows where I'm coming from if you've listened to the podcast at all. I too, I'm interested in the puzzles as well. I love obviously being the one that finds treasure, or if we do find it. But I am one of those people that I just have to have a puzzle. The way I work is that if I'm not working on some form of a puzzle or something, I've got to create my own just to keep my mind busy, because otherwise I'll go crazy with everything that goes on with real life, of course. That leads me right in. We're just going to jump right into the water here. And the first thing that I know we sort of circulated some questions and everything like that. But going right in, my first question I had for you guys, and obviously I'm going to help answer it as well, is, but what kind of tools, websites, books, stuff like that would you recommend to any new hunter that is picking up that book today and going, what's this all about? I want to learn a little bit more. What do you think there is out there?
All right. So the first thing that every new treasure hunter should have, right? Like I have a weird experience, especially with the secret. Most puzzles and treasure hunts that are smaller, brand new treasure hunters don't just happen upon them, right? You already kind of have to be a fan in some way of armchair treasure hunts or puzzles in general or whatever to find these smaller hunts. But big hunts like Forest Fen or The Secret, random nobodies can just happen upon it and be like, this is great, I'm going to get into it. And the one tool that new people tend to lack the most that they absolutely need is humility. They have to understand that most new people's only experience with puzzles like this, like The Secret or Force Fen, is like the Da Vinci Code movies, you know, or stuff in Hollywood. And they don't realize that puzzles don't necessarily work like that, right? There's not like some grand Illuminati conspiracy that goes on, like deep thinking and whatever. So they have to have a little bit of humility and patience to learn how the puzzle they're interested in works, right? Because each puzzle kind of works a little bit differently. And then the biggest tool you need is curiosity, right? Once you learn sort of the rules and the structure of the puzzle that you're wanting to work on, you need the curiosity to go out and expand your knowledge so you can figure out the answer. That to me is the most important thing any treasure hunter could have.
No, you see those sorts of things. And we'll bring it up, but like when you talk about like all the Facebook groups for, you know, The Secret or something, or even Forest Fen, is that somebody will see, and I'll use the example of The Secret, of course, but you'll see where somebody will watch Josh Gates on Expedition Unknown, and the very next day, if you're part of one of these groups already, you'll see 500 new people join, and all of them will be like, their first post will be like, oh, I watched Expedition Unknown last night, and I think I know where four of the treasures are.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that you'll see on one of their posts. They're like, oh, how do I contact Josh Gates? So that goes to what you were just saying.
It goes further than that. Like, if you don't learn the basis of the puzzle, like the way, the structure of the puzzle, you have no boundaries in how you work on it. So you quickly go off the rails, right? That's why that curiosity and knowing how the puzzle works is important, because going off the rails is just as detrimental to you as, you know, not knowing anything at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Augie?
Yeah, I think the humility is very important there. And seeing all of the online groups dedicated to any number of these puzzles and experiences, it becomes very apparent very quickly that the experience that you're talking about, it's all you see. Because I have such a background in like particular kind of smaller puzzles, and I'm much newer to the world of like the armchair hunt world, which is a lot of times like a big gathering of a lot of those smaller bits and pieces. I would say one of the things that can be helpful is to go to some websites and just see what some common ciphers are. So like, if you're looking at something like The Secret, or if you've been exposed to something through Expeditions Unknown, if you see the solution to one of these, it's going to look so obvious. And the first thing you'll do is you'll look back at another puzzle and be like, oh, I can go ahead and apply the same approach here. And it's got to be right. And I think what gets lost in that is the appreciation for the kind of minutia in each one of those. You know, is there wordplay used here? Is there something specific in the artwork used here? And I think looking at the puzzles that have been solved, but breaking them down into the individual pieces and learning from those, rather than looking at the holistic solution and just trying to reapply that somewhere else, is going to be really helpful. So I rely heavily on Wikipedia. I think researching everything that's been done in every other hunt is too much, but getting familiar with a couple of approaches might help, because a lot of times the people creating these hunts have done other ones and they're drawing from those inspirations. Sites like Decode, where you don't have to be a hero. You can really just kind of put in a couple of ciphertexts and try to find out an answer really quick. And then maybe later, dig into the nuance of how things like a Playfair or something like that might work. But I would say in general, if you're starting off, go broad, and don't go deep immediately.
Yep.
Right. And the thing that's great about Decode, especially if you're first getting into it, is it also teaches you, like, it'll brute force a cipher for you, but it also teaches you how that cipher works. Like, if you take the time to read the documentation, you can learn how to do it by hand. And once you understand the basics of how ciphers work, it becomes really easy to sort of look at text and see exactly what you're looking at. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. To identify when you go to experience more of these books, you can look at something and the first thing you'll look at is you'll look at a bunch of letters, for instance, and you'll be able to say, hey, you know, it's missing, you know, too many vowels. So it's not an anagram, you know, so maybe it's a Caesar. So the first thing you'll do is, you know, you can go to Decode or Boxtrix or something like that and brute force it. I still write down the alphabet down the page, and then I'll just keep going like that and just counting numbers and seeing if at least the first five form some sort of a word, you know, just because that's the way I could easily brute it. Like you said, go through, Decode. And I have for a lot of things, a lot of the time consuming ciphers, I'll still go in there. But things like a Caesar or something like that, I'll still sit there and I'll write it out just because that's the fun of part of the solving. But once you can start to recognize maybe what a cipher is or what code is being used, you can then know where you want to go for the next step. You know, you'll see maybe some dashes and dots and you'll think, the first thing you'll think is, if you're in this mindset now, the first thing you're going to look at, you're going to go is, that's Morse code, you know? And then maybe even if you see something that looks like dashes and dots, you know, I've seen a lot of hidden Morse code in the form of, like, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but it's disguised. So you can tell that it's Morse code when you really look at it, but it doesn't look straight like just dashes and dots. You know, maybe something, you know, three long things and then two. There was one. I'm pretty sure it was the Golden Oyster out of Whitstable in England. I don't know if either of you picked up that book, but in one of the pages, there was fish, and they were different sizes. So there was big fish and there was small fish. And I looked at it for the longest time, and then it hit me that the bigger fish could be the dashes and the little fish could be the dots. And so when you broke it down like that, it was Morse code. You know, when you first look at it, you're like, they're just fish. But when you actually use it towards a cipher, it made sense. And I've talked about it on one of my earlier podcasts that I'd give the instructions on it and obviously the background. But when you see a group of numbers, for instance, you would think of a Polybius. That's the first thing. Anytime I see two groups of numbers and they're between one and five, the first thing that's going to hit my head automatically is a Polybius. And then there's obviously the book ciphers and stuff like that. So you can, once you are familiarizing yourself with these things through some of these sites and stuff like that, you can pick them up easier when you see them in future ones.
Yeah. Even so far as when it goes more complex, like if you're, like you were saying with Morse code, it's easy to transpose symbols for dots and dashes. But when you know what you're looking for, when you see two sets of symbols that are doing weird stuff, you automatically go to Morse, you know, stuff like that. It's just that basis is so important.
Yeah. And Google's a great friend. There's never anything wrong with Googling the words you're seeing on a page or Googling what you think you might be seeing on it. I've fallen victim to this many times, and this goes back to George's mention of humility, where I'm like, oh, you know, I'm familiar enough with all this stuff that I don't need to go back and like check out basics of anything. But sometimes just looking at a secondary source, whether that's someone else you're working with or just Google itself, can help reset you out of your preconceived notions. You know, one of the most dangerous things that I've fallen into as a hunter is I'll see something that I think is Morse and I'll be like, okay, cool. And I'll work that as Morse and it doesn't make sense. Well, I'm like, well, maybe now I need to do something else to it. And I start digging this hole for myself where I probably should have just like stepped back earlier on and taken a couple of other considerations before being so certain that my first one, which didn't lead anywhere productive, was correct.
And I've fallen down the trap as well of, and I'm not sure if you guys have yourselves, but of seeing something, like you just said, thinking maybe it's Morse or maybe it's a Caesar, and looking at it and being so like blindsided in your head that you're right. And when it's not coming out right, you're like, well, it must be broken, or they must have done something wrong, or maybe the way I'm decoding it is wrong, and maybe they use something else to decode it. You know, I've been there where I've looked at something and I'm like, I know the answer is going to be this, you know, but why isn't it working when I'm trying to do it this way? And this will lead into my next question, but I've often worked not just by myself, but with other people. And when it comes time like that, when I'm so mindset, on one thing, that's when I'll pass it off to somebody else and go, look at this, you know, I'm sure it's this, you know, can you do it? And they'll sometimes come back to me and they'll go, no, it was really this thing, had nothing to do with Morse code or had nothing to do with a Caesar cipher. And I'm like, I was wrong, you know, but, and it, you know, I'm willing to open up to that sort of stuff, but yeah, websites, Google's your friend. I know in certain one of these hunts, again, we'll talk about the secret a lot, of course, but Googling words together that don't make sense sometimes is really, really helpful. That, you know, this word and this word, at plus whatever, you know, Googling it that way can really make you see something completely different. I know it was in The Incredible Hunt just recently, that one about the cards that came out. I know one of them was solved because there were some words in there in one of the codes that you got when you made the phone call. It said there were two words, but when you Googled the words, the first like 100 things that came up or whatever brought up the Beale cipher. You know, they led you to the Beale cipher. So then the next thing underneath that code, you saw a bunch of numbers. You're like, okay, well, it's the Beale cipher. Maybe those numbers are, you know, letters in the Beale cipher. So you bring that up, and when you do, and that's what it is you count down the letters and you end up finding the word that you need just from Googling those two words together. Otherwise, the whole sentence didn't make sense. But when you Google those two words together, that's what broke it down for you.
Yeah, going farther than that, the Cleveland puzzle for The Secret was solved because some dude Googled Socrates, Pindar, and Apelles.
Yep.
If he hadn't done that, everybody would still be looking in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And knowing how to Google is also an important skill. So, like, just a couple of quick tricks, you know, knowing how to remove something from search options or look for specific phrases rather than general keywords. Like, you can learn how to Google more effectively in, like, 5 minutes, and it's going to be well worth your time.
Absolutely. What about any books that you would recommend for people? Are there any special, like, books that you would think would be helpful to somebody jumping in?
Oh God, my Codes and Ciphers book. I can't remember the name of it now. It's on my bookshelf. I should have grabbed it. There is, if you go looking for Codes and Cipher books, if you go to like Barnes and Noble, you'll find a bunch of them, but there's this one really thick one. You'll find a bunch of different editions of it. And it's called like Codes and Ciphers.
Yeah.
And it was written in the 60s or 70s or something. And it's
by Barnes and Noble. It actually says on the cover, you know, not by Barnes and Noble, but it's like being,
it's like redone. Yeah.
Yeah. By Barnes and Noble. I know the one that you're talking about. I'm looking at, okay, here it is. Code Ciphers and Secret Cryptic, Communication, Making, Breaking Secret Messages and Hieroglyphics Off to the Internet by Fred B. Rixton.
Best book ever.
Yep. Yep. That's a staple right on my desk whenever I'm doing any type of a code breaking. Because it has,
everything.
It's got everything. Yeah. From the picture ones, from Goldbug to Dancing Men to the Shadow Cipher, everything.
And you know? he goes in depth in teaching you exactly how these work from like a beginner level to so far advanced that the guy that wrote the book created his own cipher and put it in the book, and he forgot how to solve it. And it's still unsolved. Nobody can figure out how to solve it.
Yep. Yep. So that's a great book. And I know it's had lots of different editions too. I've seen people pick up, like, I've got one that's got a black cover on it. I know I've seen people have one that has a green cover on it. It's the exact same book. It's just come out as a different edition. And I would also recommend going back to sites again. Obviously Facebook groups are great. I think that you often get things out of him, but yeah, everybody's face is on this, but they're also a bane. They're also a pain. Everybody that's on there seems to be right and everybody else is wrong. And then not only that, like you'll get some that like people are so open up to sharing about everything. Sometimes they overshare. And then you get the ones that are like crickets. You go in there and you're like, this site hasn't had a post in, you know, 4 months or whatnot. Cause I've been an admin on some of these, some of these groups. But one site I would recommend as well is Mysterious Writings. I think Jenny Kyle does an amazing job on her site. The forum on there, very good.
Her books also.
Her books, yeah, absolutely. She's got some great cipher books as well, so that would really help for people starting off as well. And they're very easy to get. You can get them straight off Amazon as well. But she's got, you know, a topic on the forum for pretty much everything. I know she's also involved in being a part of them, not just writing about them. She does post a lot on social media through her sites as well. But the forum... it's been a while since I've been because I'm not really a forum person. I don't see much out of it myself. I see a lot more people that are like, well, what do you think of this? And then somebody answering back going, well, did you try this? You know, and of course that's what they tried. They wouldn't have gotten here if they didn't try that. And then a lot more, there's sometimes just a lot more back and forth than of people, almost a social thing more than about trying to work out what the hunt is, because nobody wants to share their answers, of course.
Yeah.
I think she uses it a lot. A lot of the well, it's to keep people updated on what is happening with them too. Like she'll release and let people know when there's a new hunt coming out. She'll let people know that when a hunt is solved, she'll do write-ups with interviews and stuff like that. When ones are released, she'll do her six questions, and then she'll also do six questions and she'll do other stuff with the people that found certain ones. Her site is really good, not just for the forum itself, but just for keeping up to date on what's still available, what's not available, what's been found, that sort of thing. All right, well, that's good sort of overall. Do you have anything more?
I was just gonna let I didn't want to steal from Augie. I was gonna give him a chance to respond, but I do like Facebook groups and forums are great for one thing. Finding other people, because really like the best thing that forums and Facebook groups or Reddit or Discord or whatever, the best thing that they bring, it sounds cheesy, but it's sort of like a fellowship. It's a place for everybody to get together and hang out, right? It's not a great medium for a whole bunch of people working to, you know, step by step solve this thing, right? But it is a great way to find people who think like you that you can work with. You're right. When you go on Facebook, when you go on Reddit or any of these other places, it's just people trying to convince somebody else that they're correct, right? Or people arguing about why they're correct and the poster is not correct or whatever, you know, but finding that team, finding a team of people to work on a puzzle with you when you don't have access to a medium like that, so difficult. Like, I don't have anybody in my real life friends group that wants to work on puzzles like I, you know, but I've got a shitload of them online because of Facebook and because of Reddit. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say the same thing for a team. I have a dedicated team of friends, and we also bring people in depending on what hunt we're working on. And it is the best thing we have going for us. And we've all got our strengths, and we've been, you know, we also recognize whose strength is what, and we're happy to pass things off. That's been great. And I also agree with all the points on Facebook. One of my favorite things on Facebook and, you know, the social medias in general, in regards to this is that, yeah, the posts are usually nightmarish. But you'll often find someone on a post who's like, hey, I've got a problem, or can I run something by somebody, or do I have boots on the ground somewhere? And I've had significantly more productive direct messages and individual conversations with a person who had something specific they wanted to talk through than I ever have on a general, group post. So yeah, like use the group to find some people, find out who those people that you can work with and you like enjoy, and you know, it can be mutually beneficial, and try to stick with them. And just avoid the trolls at all costs.
Yeah. Yeah. If you use Facebook, Reddit, if you use these places just as a community hub where you can just do, like when I was doing the secret groups, we would do community driven stuff. Like we would do Secret Santa or we would do Sunday Fundays or whatever, just something to bring people together to get them talking one on one so that they could branch off. If that's how you use those kind of tools, then you'll find it's very effective.
Yeah. And that's how, we've all sort of started talking about it. That leads into the next question is and I know where most of us all stand on this, but what are your thoughts on team versus individual hunting and what you think is better? Going on what you were just saying, I met my team and it just started off with me and Nick, Spira, when we started. We were posting against each other on one sort of hunt. On Mysterious Writings. And again, we just sort of slipped into that message that was like, hey, you know, well, what, if you're thinking this, I'm thinking that, you know, why don't we try and sort of put together the middle ground? And we started talking just that way. And then we just sort of like, oh, this is taking too long to keep going through an individual message of a forum. You know, here's my number, you know, send me a text, you know, and we just started texting. Hey, I've got this idea. We started off with Fandango years and years ago. And actually, to tell you the truth, we actually started off with Bosal years and years ago. And then we moved into Fandango. Fandango was a dumpster fire that I quickly moved away from, but Nick couldn't leave it alone. And fair go. He was invested. He had some great ideas, but then we moved into others. And then slowly that's when we got into things like the Lost Sky and stuff like that. The ones that we ended up. Were able to solve and stuff like that. But same thing, I met him, you know, never met him in face-to-face until I flew to Ohio to meet him when we went to dig up our treasure. But he's a good friend of mine, you know. The people I've just recently went over and visited over in England, they were all virtual friends. And George, you do this all the time, I'm sure, but they were all virtual until that one time I went and I met them, you know. We had dinner, we did what we wanted to do, you know, we sat and chatted for treasure forever and ever, but I couldn't do that with any of my friends here. And it's probably a safe thing that I don't have friends where I live that are into the things I'm in, because I'd be off at a bar having drinks talking about treasure, or they'd be over at my house, or I'd be over their house doing it. Right now, I know where my limits are of talking about it, because, you know, I can sort of put my phone down and go, okay, I'm not responding to a text or a message tonight, you know. But I myself know I can't do these things on my own. I just can't. I'm one that can look at a code or a cipher and I can, you know, I have to brood it. I'll look at it. It doesn't come to me straight away. I'm not some savant or anything like that, but I can get it. Okay. But you put an image in front of me. Nah, I'm hopeless with an image. I'm hopeless. I'll look at it and go, oh, that's a pretty picture, you know, but I can't pick out the nuances of the hand symbol looks like this, or, you know, maybe they're pointing to that, or, you know, whatever. So that's when I started working with Nick. Nick can do that. Nick does do that. And he sees something in a picture that I absolutely would never have seen. He goes, did you see that little thing that's pointing at that thing? I think that means, you know, it's in, you know, West Hole, Virginia, or something like that, because it's a hole on the west side of the picture or something. I'm like, dude, I didn't even see that hole, let alone know it's on the west side of the picture. You know, so those are things I know I can't do, and that's where we work really well. We've obviously brought other people into my team and our team, and since then we've all, same sort of thing. We all know where we work well. You know, if it's something like this, I'll say, hey, who wants to do this? Because I can't see anything in this, and I'll be like, yep, let's go. What about you guys, George? What about you?
Well, I want to push back on something that you said.
Okay.
I don't think Fandango was a dumpster fire. What I think is you're going back to teams. What I think the biggest problem with Fandango was it became attacked by power hunters that didn't have like humility that we were talking about before. Like you were talking about like going through a puzzle and it has to be this way and it has to be this way and you keep hitting a brick wall, when the solution to Fandango was the dumbest shit that I've ever heard of, right? A child could have figured that out. A child could have been like, okay, so there's a compass rose on the back and it's got a bunch of different colors. And if we fold the page this way, it makes the colors and that makes numbers and let's go right there. Like a child could have figured that out. And then when all of these power, when it ended and all the power hunters were like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like that lack of humility and lack of like going in the dumbest, simplest direction first and just going into this thinking, okay, this is super complex. That's what made it a dumpster fire.
I agree. And I mean, I'm going to bring up something that you probably know a lot about then, and I'll bring it up as a topic is Boston then. Would you agree that was similar situation where everybody is so far overthought these
100%
these puzzles and these pictures and these images, and this guy's like, oh look, he's got a baseball diamond.
I remember me and John Michaels. We used to talk about Boston, and John Michaels had this thing in the image. There is a bird, and right by his beak is a bubble, right. And then there's another bubble off on the other side of the painting next to the letter N. And John Michaels had it was a great idea that the bubbles were sort of connecting these two clues. So it was a beak and then the letter N, which is Beacon, which is a very famous street in Boston. And then John Palancar comes out and says, the bubble's going to pop. And that's the Boston Pops. Like it's 100% correct. It's all of these old school hunters were like, this is really complex. And then John's like, there's the baseball diamonds right here.
Yeah. I know. When I saw that, I was like, the baseball diamond. And I'm sure I saw it with everybody else. And they're like, why did we never see that?
Yeah.
How is that possible? That like everybody's breaking these things down and seeing numbers and my favorite are the ones that like to bring on and put impose like Google Maps over an image. And I'm like, dude, there was no such thing as these sorts of maps in 82, so it can't possibly be part of the image.
Yeah.
You know?
And even when you go back to like 1982 maps, if you're going to do an overlay like that, you got to have a very specific map because these maps, like in scale, they're different.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. I think that one of the biggest problems with hunts like The Secret or Forest Fen, for instance, where something's buried or hidden is that whatever's buried or hidden is tiny and the earth is big, right? Even in a baseball field, hiding something as small as the treasure from The Secret, it's like finding a needle in a haystack, digging up an entire baseball field, you know? Yeah. When people work on their solutions, the puzzles, and then they go out and maybe they dig a hole and they don't find it. They don't take into account, maybe I'm 10 inches off or 5 inches off or whatever. They automatically go to, it's way more complicated. Like Robert, you and Nick had that problem with the Lost Skull, right? You dug for an entire day.
We dug that labyrinth up. And when finally we got in contact with the author and we were 2 inches.
Yeah.
And he said, like, you just dig over there a little bit more. And we didn't even have to – we just enlarged a hole that we already had.
Yeah, basically plus, Chicago, too.
We just enlarged a hole we already had, and there it was sitting, you know, right there. So, yeah, exactly right. You could be inches away and never find these things. So, yeah, it does take the humility that you've been talking about and everything like that. But you really do have to, you know, be patient with these things. Because these things, some of these ones, like for instance, The Secret, and Augie, we'll get to you again about the teams in just a moment, but The Secret in general, like it's been around so long that this isn't a race to find these things anymore.
Yeah.
It's not a race. These things are, it's a marathon to find these things.
And like the three that were found were not found by meticulous puzzle solving. They were found by moving massive amounts of dirt. Massive. The guys who found Chicago dug for like 6 months. They dug hole after hole after hole. Brian and Andy in Cleveland dug up an entire planter. It took a construction crew for Boston, right? Like, you know, just have some patience.
And even after all the digging, it's like a random shovel throw sometimes that actually reveals it.
Well, in both Cleveland and Chicago, it was a random. In Chicago, it was got pissed off, threw the shovel at the dirt, found the cask. And in Cleveland, Andy got bored and was like, I'm going to go over here. Clink.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you guys have read the story of Masquerade. Like there was two teachers, physics teachers in England that actually had worked it out properly. They were actually the story, and one of the stories I read is that they were actually digging. They dug up the thing that it was supposed to be, but they didn't recognize it. And it was in their spoil pile. Okay. The guy that had the inside, the cheating guy, he came and he basically went on their spoiler pile after they'd left. He's like, oh, there it is. Took it because he knew what it was. He took it and ended up being the one, you know, for a while anyway, that found it. But these two had actually found it. They dug it up. They just didn't know what they were looking at to recognize it.
I was thinking about something yesterday. I'm going to put you guys on the spot. So if there's something, an answer that's super obvious that nobody comes up with, just remember that I've put these guys on the spot. Can either of you think of a single puzzle where one person, something buried, right? Something buried or hidden, where one person got a text and figured out exactly where that thing was from the text, went out, dug one hole and found it.
I mean, I remember John Michaels saying he couldn't find the thing he buried himself. So
yeah,
it's probably unlikely that someone's doing it off of one random text.
I mean, I think George, I think I told you this story, but I mean, yes, I can, but it's because again, cheating. When me and Nick were working on this little tiny one in Florida, it was actually
the Everglades one. Yeah.
And it was like in the middle of nowhere in the Everglades. Nick had actually gone there. He was there at 6 o'clock in the morning because it was on his way to work. It was dark. He could hear the alligators. It was like craziness. He was like out searching for this place because we knew it was in this general location. He was up, you know, taking off, rocks and everything like that. And he'd been there for about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. I was on the phone with him pretty much the whole time. He's dropping my kids off at school. I was like, have you found anything yet? He's like, no. He's like, I'm taking a break. I'm sitting in my car. He's like, hang on, this car just pulled up. He's like, he's getting out. He's a kid. There's a guy and a kid. He's got a shovel. He's gone over to this rock. He's tipped over this rock. Oh, look, he has the treasure. He's in his car. He's driven off. So, yeah, this one guy came up, one rock, lifted the rock up, didn't even use the shovel, you know, took the treasure, walked away. Well, we've since found out that it was a friend of the author, and he'd actually written this thing to be found by this person, and not so much thinking that somebody was actually going to break it like me and Nick had. And we knew we were in the general location. Well, he told the guy where to go so his son could find it and I found a treasure and sort of walked away with it. But yeah, that's the one story I have on that. But you're right. There isn't any time where somebody has picked up, even if you don't use a text or anything like that's picked up a book and gone, oh, I know exactly where that is. Gone right there and dug it up.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen.
If it helps, me and a guy named Arthur made a hunt, and we were conscious of that when it was buried. So if you go through that hunt and if you don't know to the freaking inch where you need to dig, you're wrong.
I know. We've all been working on the secret anniversary one. No worries.
Yeah, maybe.
Just a little bit. So we sort of went over you, Augie, but what are your ideas? I know you've talked about teams before, but what are your thoughts here?
Oh, yeah. I am worthless without my people. And when it comes to things like armchair treasure hunting, and it's because it's so different from so many other things. You know, I have skills and they're great, but in the majority of the armchair style hunts that I've taken part in, there are so many things at play. You know, whether it's a verse or a visual or ciphers or wayfinding or digging your hands into a tree trunk. Every one of these is a different skill set. It's a different comfort level. And thankfully, I feel like our team has that and it's worked so well for us. My girlfriend knows how to use spreadsheets like it's her first language. And I can't even tell you what I'm doing tomorrow. Like I don't even have a calendar. I'm awful at this. Her dad is an integral part of the team. He's the guy who will put his hand into any tree stump regardless of safety, and that has literally found us more than one buried treasure that we had walked over because I wasn't willing to, like, you know, crawl into a log. And you know, we've got a handful of people, and it's always, hey, there's a new hunt, who can join in? And it's been absolutely integral. And it's not to say that, you know, any number of us couldn't have done it without any of the rest of us, but it's also like, it makes it a lot more enjoyable. I've spent nights and weekends banging my head against the wall on some of these when, you know, other people were busy or I just had some free time on my hands. And it's not nearly as enjoyable when you're sitting there by yourself trying to crank through the same ideas. And if you're not having fun doing a hobby like this, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like, your teammates are going to be important because they're going to offer up those skills that you don't have, but they're also going to be your friends who are with you doing something that should be enjoyable.
Yeah, because you'll go out, like when me and Nick found Lost Scout, we went out and we toured around Cleveland. We went to, you know, the Greek Cultural Gardens and took our picture right there, you know. We went to all the sites that are in the book and sat down and had lunch. That night we went out and had a nice dinner to celebrate, you know, because there was something that we just enjoyed it. We didn't make any money off it. I'd driven to Ohio twice from New York, from New Jersey. He'd flown up from Florida. You know, we weren't making any money out of this thing, but the fact that we were, you know, there, we had found it, you know, nobody else had, we'd solved this thing. You know, it was, you could have given us $1 million and it would have been the same, feel as it was finding $500, because it was, we found it. We were there. We were the first ones. So yeah, definitely. I wouldn't have been able to do that on my own. Would have been the same thing.
Yeah. Teams are definitely integral, but you have to be careful with teams because you run into two different problems. You run into the problem of your team becoming an echo chamber, like really, really easily. But also we were talking a while back about pro teams, right? These big, huge teams of treasure hunters that get together, they have their own problems where it ends up being a group of yes men for one or two different people, or it just becomes drama itself. It's like a smaller microcosm of a Facebook group. It's just infighting and arguing or whatever. So it's important when you do find this team that it truly is friends. You know, like both of you. 90% of the stuff that happened in The Secret that I get credit for is only because of the people I work with, right? It's a group of people who come together with the sole purpose of finding new stuff and sharing it with people, right?
Yeah.
Your team, it's the most vital thing you could have.
And on the team thing as well, the one thing I found as well is that don't ever be afraid to tell somebody else on the team that they're wrong and that they're focused on something wrong. There's been numerous times, and I talked about it before, where I've absolutely thought I was right on something. Or Nick, there's been a couple of times where he's gone down that rabbit hole, and he's like, I think it's this, and I'll be like, Nick, come back, let's go back to this part, you know, and then where do we go from next? And he's like, oh, well, maybe that didn't work now, you know, where if I had just left him in that rabbit hole, we could have dug to China, you know, but we both pulled back, and he's done it to me a couple of times. This is leading to that. I'm researching this, and he's like, "That's not needed. You're wasting time there. Let's go back to this and focus on this." So, don't be afraid to say something to somebody if you think that maybe that they are wrong, or maybe you need more clarification on it. Don't just agree with them because they seem to have got an answer that you think fits. You know, try to work it out for yourself if you can, and have them explain it to you as you're doing it, so that you know what was happening. That's the way we work when we did our puzzles as well. So you'll be like, okay, so I found the answer to this. I was like, well, how did you do that? Tell me, because I want to know how it was done. Because the answer's not no good to me if I don't know, you know, in my head how you got to it. You know,
yeah.
All I'm going to be thinking about is how you got to that.
I think the challenge is most important too. If you're trying to get on a team with any sort of seasoned hunter, anybody that's got any sort of respect in the treasure hunting community, challenging them is important, because the hardest thing for people who are seasoned in treasure hunting to find is someone who will challenge them. Everybody wants to be on their team because they think they're, you know, awesome or whatever, and they just agree with every single idea they have. Finding people who are willing to be like, no, that's dumb, to a seasoned hunter is difficult. So, yeah.
But without being saying that's dumb, but having
a good reason for saying it's dumb.
Just say that person's dumb and then not have a backup for it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll go on to the next thing about this then. this sort of leads back to question one, of course, but what are some of the things that you think that a new armchair treasure hunter, again, that guy that's just picking up the book for the first time, needs to know to become successful? Now, I'm going to go more with you, Augie, because I know that you've been pretty successful in these hunts that you've been doing for the past 2 years. Somebody, and you brought it up, and we'll bring this up as a topic in just a moment as well. And this, again, goes to the second question with teams and stuff like that. But what do you think are some of the things that a new hunter would need to know? Not just sights or anything like that, but something, you talked about humility and everything like that. But what are some of the other things that you think would be to make them successful?
Yeah, as much as I think humility is, you know, maybe the number one, confidence is also surprisingly important. I got burned by this very early in my like competitive career. There was a global puzzle hunt basically. And it was the first one I'd done. And I was like, you know what? I'm okay at these things. I'm kind of here to test my skills, but I'm sure there's like a bunker full of people somewhere who are just crushing through this. And because of that, I got fifth in the world instead of fourth in the world, where the top four got trips to Germany. And I, instead of taking off the last morning, went to work and like didn't do much. And then my boss was like, hey, just go finish that thing. And that happened because I didn't think I could do it. And it's not even that I had a lot of skill or experience. I didn't think enough of myself. So as much as humility is important, having that balance where you also can back up your approach or whatever you're thinking for a certain thing is super important. Knowing that it's going to be frustrating is also very important. So a couple of the hunts that we've done recently have been local and put on by independent groups. And what I've seen a lot of on Facebook afterward is people saying, I didn't know what this was. You know, I didn't even get out of my house on the day where it was found. I wish I'd have been better prepared. And the way that these been like pitched is, you know, sign up, you know, pay your entry fee. We'll send you a bag, or maybe we'll send you some emails the day of, and then you'll be good to go. And I understand why the people putting these hunts on have communicated like that, but it's probably doing a disservice. I think if this is your first hunt, do more than you think you need to. If you're going to get emails on Saturday at noon, start finding out whatever you can immediately. Don't wait till Saturday at noon, because you're going to lose to somebody who is already looking at what's in the bag, is already trying to plan out where they're going to be. You know, they're not waking up and making a cup of coffee at Saturday at noon. They are already out an hour onto the road to get in the best possible position so that they can be moving forward to it. Which isn't to say that you need to be a hardcore hunter, but if you want to be successful in things like these, you need to be operating under the assumption that someone else is going to be going as hard as possible. And you either need to match that or set your expectations appropriately.
Piggybacking off of that, something that every treasure, and I feel like a senior citizen saying this. I really do. But one thing every treasure hunter should get is a book. And it was a book that came out in the 50s or 60s or whatever. It's by a dude named Dale Carnegie, and it's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. Because at some point in your treasure hunting journey, you're going to have to interact with someone in the public, right? You're going to need permission to do something. Somebody's going to stop you from doing something. You're going to have to talk your way out of something. And you need people skills. You need to realize that this park worker that just caught you digging a 6-foot hole doesn't care about your treasure. He just, you know, you have to know how to talk to him and get him to do what you want him to do. Right. So confidence is key in that, charisma, and just knowing how to deal with people.
And expecting that that's going to happen. Expecting that it's not going to be a cakewalk. You're not going to find that on your first dig. You're probably going to get caught on your first dig. Managing a lot of those expectations personally, while also along with that confidence, is making sure that you're enjoying what you're doing. If at any one of these points you're not having a good time and you're overly frustrated, nothing else is going to go well. You're not going to have a good interaction with that park worker who's coming up to you if you're already frustrated. You're not going to want to get out and go the next day if you burned yourself out on the first day.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And if you're not enjoying it, and we said this before, then why are you doing it? You know, why, if it's just frustrating you, there's been times where I've been frustrated as heck out of a puzzle, out of a hunt. And I have closed the book and put it away. you know, and then I'll pick up something else and I'll work on something else for a week or 2 weeks. And then with a fresh mindset, I might pick that first one back up again and look at it again and be like, oh, okay, now I see what I was doing wrong. Or now I'm seeing something I didn't see before. Little things like that's the BOSL, that me and Nick and team, my team solved. That thing had been hidden for 10 years and me and Nick started working on it together and then we just put it away. You know, we were like, okay, let's move on to this one. So we did this one and then we moved on to that one. We did that one and then we did this. And then eventually we're just like, okay, we picked it back up again and said, hey, and then somebody else joined us and they're like, well, you know, I've seen this one. What's it all about? And we're like, okay, well, here's our notes, you know, see what you can see out of these. And then he's like, well, did you notice this? We're like, no. So we picked the book back up again and we started reading again. And that's how we ended up getting where we got. But that's the frustration. Sometimes it is going to get you, you know, you could be working on these things and again, don't feel like, well, I say don't feel like it's a race, but yes, it is a race in some cases, but don't be of the opinion that just because you're not working hard, you're not working hard enough. I guess I'll put it because, you know, there's always going to be somebody else that's working on these things. They're not an individual thing. It's not made for you. You know, it's made for everybody to enjoy. So there is definitely going to be other people working on it, but don't put that clock in your head. Put your own clock in your head to say, okay, so I want to work on this. I want to do this. I want to do this to solve it. Because if you're working on somebody else's clock, it's just going to drive you crazy thinking that you have to, you know, solve it by X amount of time. Otherwise you're not going to be first. And that's true. You want to be first, like in your example, Augie, and be prepared to work as hard as you can. But just know where your limits are as well. That's the big thing on this.
Yeah, there was a recent one put on by a company called Wise, and it was pretty cool. They had a live stream of the like treasure spot, and then people were kind of working around the clock to narrow it down, solve it based on some clues they'd given out. But also, at the end of the day, people had narrowed down the general location, but no one had figured out exactly how to solve where it was. So there were people who had boots on the ground, and you didn't have to boots on the ground for this. You could absolutely submit online. But there were people who were boots on the ground, and one of the teams sent someone, I believe, with an ice cream truck to drive around the area with someone else watching the live stream listening for an ice cream truck. So that anybody else out there was just going to think there was an ice cream truck driving by, but to someone out there, it was the signal that this is the spot. Like, when you hear it now, let me know, and now we know we're close, and we can pinpoint from there. And I mean, one of the things that kind of came up from this was like, know your limits. Like, you're not going to beat that. Like, you're not going to beat the person who's got an ice cream truck, you know, a mile away if you're working remotely. And I think that's important with a lot of this stuff. I know that I am not the kind of person who's willing to go dig in a place where I'm not supposed to dig. That's on me. And because of that, I've also like delimited some of the hunts that I take part in regularly. But there's also people I know that love that and I'll ship it over to them. So like know what your own boundaries and limitations are, know what the boundaries and limitations of the hunt you're trying to participate in are and try to find that sweet spot. If you go digging, there are a lot more of these than I would have ever expected happening on a fairly regular basis, like either near me or online or in a place where I might want to go. So like keeping an ear at the ground, checking out all these places that we've mentioned, the podcasts, the websites, the social media, find one that seems like it's going to work for you, that you're going to want to actually be invested in the whole time.
Yeah. And just have fun. I mean, that's the main part about this is we keep talking about it, but do it because you want to do it. Like I've even picked up some of these books that have been sold, some of these hunts that have been sold and tried to work them out myself or even using usually they have instructions somewhere of how it was solved, and I'll use them sometimes and I'll be like, okay, so, you know, for instance, Masquerade, you know, the eye through the arm, through the leg, whatever. And I've done it. I've got a book that's got the lines in it just because I wanted to see if it did really work. But more than that, I just wanted to see how it worked as well so that, for instance, again, we talked about Fandango. That was one of the first things I did in Fandango as well, is that because it had that border with all the words around it and everything like that, I was drawing all – I color photocopied each one, each page, several times, I think. And then those times I was just drawing mass lines. Like this line between this thing, this stuff, and it was between colors sometimes and going up to the border. And none of it made sense. But I was like, you know, you got to try these things out. You know, sometimes that one thing might just work out.
You know, we keep talking about doing it, like have fun. And I've noticed, especially with the bigger hunts like the Secret and Forest Fen, there are a lot of people who are doing it who are not having fun. Like I don't understand. What's the end goal? Like, I know the fame thing, right? Like, people want to be famous, but I can't think of a single famous treasure hunter, right? Like, there's no Indiana Jones.
Like, yeah. Would you want to be Jack Stoof right now? Cause I wouldn't.
No.
Exactly. No, I mean, and like, and that's the person who, you know, for whatever you may or may not think on this, won one of the most sought after treasures in a long time. And I do not envy their position.
Huh? No.
I 100% agree with you on that one. It's just like, it seems like he's had more work since he found that thing that of having to stay away from the negativity of all of the, like we've talked about, the Facebook, the forums, the online, the YouTube, you know, staying away from all that and the negativity of all of that. And now with him now selling the treasure, people are back on that bandwagon of, oh, how could you do that? And, oh, why is this going for this amount of money? And like, it's a treasure hunt. That's the treasure. He's trying to make money from that treasure hunt. You would have done the same, you know. You wouldn't be keeping these things.
And speaking of money, like, that can't be a draw either, because there are some big there are some big hunts. Like, there's some $20,000 hunts, or there's Forest Fen or whatever. But most of these, you're going to spend way more money than you're going to win. Yep. Like, so that can't – I just don't understand. I don't understand what the draw is.
Yeah, we've won some large purse hunts. And to be honest, the one that we talk about the most was like one of the smaller ones, but it was so much fun. It was in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and it was just so well put together, so brilliantly thought out. And, you know, for people that ask about this stuff, like, yeah, they're like, how much did you win on this one? And we're immediately like, oh, you know, whatever. But they had this one part that was incredible. If you're not at the end of the day, it can't just be the money. It can't just be the fame, mostly because you're probably not going to get either one of those on average. But also because they're not going to sustain you.
Yeah. I mean, none of these people that found any of the casks for the Secret are famous people. I mean, within a community, the Secret community, maybe people know who they are, of course, because that's who found them. But even the ones that have been on Expedition Unknown and everything like that, they're not celebrities because they found a cask on Expedition Unknown.
They have way more problems than they have benefits. Like, Brian and Andy found Cleveland. Their moms don't love them anymore because of that, right? And people will not leave them alone. Crew Pat, like, people chase down his wife and stuff. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. I don't know.
And all these things for a tiny little gem that's really not that much. I mean, not that expensive. I mean, there was I don't know if you listened to the most recent podcast. Sorry?
X Marks the Spot?
No, not the X Marks the Spot, the other one.
Hidden Fortunes. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, that was a tough listen.
That was a tough listen, and I don't think that they went on the right direction. It was about Forest Fen, but it was more focused on one particular hunter, and then got into, it was a story of this guy's life, more than, with a side story of Forest Fen. But at the end, he actually talks because Forest Fen was found, this hunter just had to, sort of like what we've talked about, just had to have a puzzle, just had to have a treasure hunt. So he jumped in the Secret. He's now big into the Secret, apparently, and he was like trying to find all these secret gems and everything like that. So that was like the last episode of the series, and he's like, oh, now he's doing this, and if you've
never,
here's a little bit of a backstory to this. Now you're dragging the Secret in with Forest Fen, and you know.
Oh God, the Forest Fen hunters are nuts. You know the two most not profitable, but the two treasure hunters that I think have gotten more out of treasure hunts than anybody are this couple named Nadine and Kim. I'm sure you guys have ran across Nadine and Kim. They have solved countless treasure hunts. Like, I can't even count how many they've solved. And it's just, they do it because it's fun. Like you go, they'll show you pictures or you go to their house or whatever and they've got this cabinet full of little ugly rinky dink things that they've won. And that's it. Like they just go and have adventures together. That's their reward. They don't care about the money. They don't care about the thing. They don't want you to know who they are. Like, I want to be that kind of treasure hunter.
Well, that's what the Kobar is. I mean, that's what I have around the corner here. I don't record in there right now because the acoustics were bad. but over there, you know, I have up on the one wall, I have the cross and I'm probably one of, and you mentioned before, I'm one of the few treasure hunters that I think I've paid more than actually, even though I've won, because every one of the treasure hunts that I found, especially when I found them in the group, we've had the prize, we've had extra ones made up, so we all got to experience it. So when we found the Bosul treasure, it was this little cross, little gold cross. Nick took it to a jeweler, and he had five of them made up. That's so awesome. I have one in the code bar sitting there. It's actually a nice little gold chain, and it's on one of those busts that you get from like Michael's, so it looks all professional. But it cost me like $150 to have that thing made. You know, there was no prize money in this thing, but just the cross, the original cross. It cost me $150 to have that made. When we won Count of Saint Germain, we won this like horn. It's called the Horn and Magistrum. And it's like, it's got like a crystal at the end. It's kind of cool looking. When we won it, again, there's only one of these things, you know? So we actually, again, Nick, we went to the actual original maker of these horns and we're like, can you make some more? He's like, yeah. It's like, they've got to be exact. So we made four more and that one cost us like $250. So again, I have it out there in the code bar. So my wife is going crazy whenever I say I'm winning a treasure hunt. She's, how much is this going to cost me? You know, because that's what it comes down to. It's the trinkets. It's the, I have them out there. I often get like big, like canvases made of maybe my favorite image, or even verse from whatever treasure hunt that we've solved, you know, and I'll put it up on the wall, you know, because that's my prize. That to me is what I've won. You know, and like you've always said, there'll be people that will say, well, how much have we won on that? I'll be like, well, you know, we got $500. They're like, yeah. Well, it's like, but I took two trips out to Ohio, you know, stayed in a hotel both times. My friend Nick flew up, hotels, you know, gas, paid for food, you know, probably didn't make anything. You know what? Yeah. I had a heck of a time.
It's the same as like people who keep yearbooks for high school. Like, why do you keep those? When you look through them, you immediately remember the memories you have, right? So you've got these trinkets sitting on your wall. When you look through them, you immediately remember all of these adventures. It's just a reminder, and it's lasts a lot longer than $500.
Yeah, this goes back to something that's been discussed, but if we're talking about something that someone who's just getting started in this hobby can do to benefit themselves, identifying what it is you want exactly out of this is going to get you a lot. Like if you think you want money, there are better ways to do it, and a quick Google search will show them to you. If you think you want fame, there are better ways to get that. What this is really good for is those adventures with friends, you know, doing something that you might not have done elsewise. Some of that like intrigue and suspense that you might have seen in the movies on a much smaller scale. But like find out that either that emotion you're searching for or that activity or experience you want to do, and double check that this is a good way to go about achieving that.
I think that's actually probably the perfect way to end this one. Like that's exactly right. It's like, you're not going to get rich and famous. We're not looking for El Dorado here. You know, we're looking for little trinkets. You know, this is one step up from geocaching, you know? We have fun doing it. I mean, I can't imagine doing anything else in my spare time than doing these things because
that's our favorite hobby.
I just love it. And even if it's something that somebody else looks at it and you know, somebody will say, I was getting some food the other night and with my son and I was watching the soccer up on the TV in the store. And so I said something about like, oh, I was in England just the other day. I was going to go see a live game, but I was too busy. And he's like, oh, what were you doing over there? I was like, he goes, were you over for work? And I was like, oh, I was doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that. He's like, what do you mean? I was like, oh, well, I was over there looking for a treasure. He's like, what? And this guy is like asking all these questions, like, what do you mean? What treasure? You know? And it was just, when you say something like that, they're like, wow. You know, but you, the general person on the street, I've also had the conversation where I've been speaking with somebody and they're like, oh, I work for this company and I work in a call center. That's my day job. But you know, on the side, I like to have this little, you know, hobby of where I treasure hunt. And they're like, what? You know, treasure hunt? It's like, what do you mean treasure hunt? I was like, well, there's these books and I'll try to work them out. And they're like, I've never heard of that before. Tell me more. You know? Yeah. So, and then there's those other ones that just have the dumb face and they're like, oh, that's nice. You know, so, but, guys, I really want to thank you. I know we've probably got a lot more we could cover, but maybe we'll save that for another one if you guys want to come back again. Sure. George, obviously, where can people, if they do want to reach out to you, maybe, I don't know, but what, what's up?
I got a website at Swamp Treasures. There's a little email form. If you want to reach out to me, just do that. Shoot me an email.
Excellent. What about you, Augie?
I am Okapi Kid, OKAPIKID, everywhere online. So feel free to just type that into something. And if you want to talk about anything, I'm around, especially if you're in the Midwest and you want to do anything in the Midwest, because we are experience starved out here trying to make and take part in as many as possible. So holla at your boy.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys for coming on. I really appreciate it. When I get the next one going up, I will hope maybe you guys will come back for another one. But in the meantime, again, thank you and have a great night.
Cool.
And Roundtable. And for all the information that doesn't make it into the podcast, as well as the links that I mentioned, please visit the show notes and please don't forget to like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all with the handle at CodeBarLive, as well as follow Arias Gray, and that's Gray with a G-R-E-Y. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast, and please help the podcast grow by leaving a rating and a review, especially on the big one, Apple Podcast. And until next time, everyone, keep digging.